football on off the ball.
Well, I think man management is far more nuanced nowadays, as you're suggesting, because the dressing rooms have changed. You've got players from different faiths, different cultures, different communities, and you've got to reflect all that. These are player whisperers as well as player shouters.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome back to Backseat Pundits. There's a stylish range of Renault SUV hybrids, including the Astral, Captur and Symbios. Packed full of really innovative and intuitive tech designed to enhance your driving, it can give up to 1,100 kilometers in range from a full tank, it can run on purely electric up to 80% of the time in urban areas, and has all of the latest safety features, including pedestrian and cyclist recognition. Great acceleration thanks to the hybrid powertrain. Hey Google, directions to the Aviva Stadium. In this episode of Backseat Pundits, I was joined by former Leinster and Ireland tighthead prop, Mike Ross. We dissected Ireland's defeat to France and looked ahead to Ireland versus Italy this weekend.
Mike, delighted to be joined by you. How are things?
Very good. How are you? How are things with you?
We're obviously in the aftermath of France mauling, is it fair to say, a 22-point defeat in the Stade de France in Paris last night. Let's just get your initial thoughts first, your takeaways from the game.
We seem to lose every 50-50 going, you know, yeah. So we were definitely on the wrong side of the ledger. And I think I saw a stat there yesterday that every time we kicked and the kick and kick chase, we only won like 3 out of 11.
Yeah,
you know, and the French won, you know, 8 of those ones. So that obviously made a huge difference to our attacking capability, because our game plan seemed to be fairly biased up towards what's the new trend in the game now. It's the kick and chase and get field position from the kick and chase. And if you're not catching the kicks, it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah.
The French, in contrast, seem to kick it deep to us and have a good kick chase and then invite us to play out, and it didn't really work for us.
It felt like the accuracy kind of point was very obvious watching that game, and that, like you say, that both teams were kicking, but one team was just getting returns. I know both teams kicked 39 times each.
Yeah.
In the game, so it wasn't like we were kicking too much. I think it was just the accuracy point of France had figured out when to kick and how to kick, and obviously Chase comes into that in terms of their wingers were on form that day.
They were dominating there, and it made a huge difference to the outcome of the game, because just imagine, for example, that we won maybe we won 80% of those kicks, you know, and then we're looking at a completely different scoreline. But that said, you know, we're that few fractions of a second off. You know, I think I was watching our defensive line was coming up to a point and then it slowed down.
Yeah.
Whereas usually you're used to seeing them flying up into the defensive line, flying up, putting the attackers under pressure. And at times France could, you know, play as they liked. They did more time in the ball. And if you give a French side time in the ball, you're always going to invite disaster.
And I don't know about you, but I think for myself and a lot of people watching, it became kind of obvious that, you know, the kicking wasn't working, particularly going into the second half. It continued even when we did start to get a bit of ball in hand, getting through some phases. It was Gibbs Park just kept going back to that kick, that box kick. Do you think we were lacking a bit of a plan B?
I think that could be fair to say. I mean, clearly they saw something in the preview that suggested that the French were vulnerable to this, you know, which is why they continued to pursue it. But once it became apparent that, you know, plan A wasn't working, yeah, there should have been a switch to plan B, whatever that is. And, you know, it's kind of easiest for us to be sitting in a car a day or two after talking about this. But, you'd imagine that the coaching staff should have had something ready to go with it. But I don't know what was being said in there. And I didn't do the preview of it. So maybe there was a very strong case. They had seen plenty of evidence that this should work. And eventually the break would come, but just didn't.
And outside of the kicking, because that was an obvious thing that kind of cropped up in a lot of people's minds, even just in the morning after, what else in your eyes went wrong last night?
Well, it just seemed like every breaking ball the French got it, you know. The French TV director struck again.
Yeah.
You know? No, I'm not saying that they wouldn't have beaten us without it, but, you know, the first pass, the pass for, I think it was Billy Barry's try, was suspiciously forward.
Yeah.
On the one time I got to see it, you know, live.
Yeah.
So it's not like they went back and replayed it. You know, so I think they're, like, that's a common theme, and there definitely needs to be a bit of neutrality around that, you know, because,
yeah,
you know, I maybe it wasn't Ford, but I don't know because we didn't get to see it.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, I have to roll it back.
Yeah, roll it back, but,
and then it's too late.
But, like, you know, that aside, we would probably would have lost anyway. But,
yeah,
you know, when a team gets on top of you like that, and they've got momentum with them, and they're getting all the kind of rubs of the green, you know, it can snowball and very hard to stop.
Is that a thing that you clocked as a player when playing France in, say, the Stade de France or wherever in France it may be, that you weren't going to get anything your way outside of what was going on the pitch, specifically like the TV directors, the crowd, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, the French have this mentality that our home is our fortress. You know, and you look at the top 14 and how it goes there. I think, you know, the win ratio of away teams is, you know, minuscule. You know,
yeah.
So even teams that you expect to beat another team, often you go to their away ground and it's full of passionate fans. You know, you don't get much decisions from the ref because there's so much noise in the stadium,
yeah,
and it can be really, really hard to win away. You know, and I mean, you look at our win record in Paris the last couple of decades, we haven't had a lot of them.
Yeah, pretty scarce. Did you feel like at halftime it was all but over? I know that should never be the mentality for a player or even really a fan in any game, but 22-0 down, and, like, as we were saying, the Stade de France, when the crowd gets behind the team,
yeah,
it's very hard to come back.
That's the other thing, you know, if you're playing a French team, you know you're going to get a period where they switch off.
Yeah,
you know, and when we were pulling them, when we scored those two tries, I thought, you know, we get another try here, and suddenly,
yeah,
they're going to get a little less comfortable, you know. And
yeah,
you know, I thought we were quite unlucky, you know, that when it got knocked on the base of the ruck. If we scored there, then suddenly, you know, the deficit's around 8 points, and they're not as comfortable, and things can happen. And I always back Ireland to finish strongly.
Was there anyone in particular that kind of, on the Ireland side of things, we can get to the French team in a minute, that really impressed you? I know it was a night of a few players probably didn't help their stock in terms of selection and kind of public popularity, to put it. Is there anyone that you were impressed with on a tough night like that?
I think, you know, Tadhg Byrne had a good game. Took him a while to get going, but he got some poaches in the second half. And I thought the subs made a good difference coming on. You know, they definitely made an impact with Jack Conan and Nick Timoney and Michael Milne.
Yeah.
Both Timoney and Milne got on the scoreboard. And, you know, that's what subs are supposed to do. Supposed to inject a bit of point of difference. So, you know, when he's picking his team next week, it's kind of, you know, he's got a few hard decisions to make on that front, I think.
One good thing about the game, which a lot of people have noted since yesterday, the scrum, which was a point of contention going into this game, that people were slightly worried that, you know, there was injuries on the loose head side, there was injuries on the tight head side. People were kind of concerned going into this game, but it held up quite well in the end.
Yeah, and to be honest, I wasn't overly worried about our scrum, you know, because I saw the French team and they weren't picking a team with scrum in mind.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
They're picking a team to move around the park, you know, as we saw. I think it was Olivon playing in the second row.
Yeah.
You know? He's usually a back row. Scored a try, so it worked out. But yeah, and look, we did have to go deep in the depth chart, and I thought Jeremy Lochman played well. I thought Tom Clarkson played well. So, you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of catastrophizing after the South African game, but South Africa are kind of on a tier of their own, really, when it comes to scrums, and I'd back Ireland scrum to handle most other nations, and
yeah,
they will.
And I suppose another kind of concern going into that game was the line-out. Our line-out hasn't really been firing over maybe the last season or so. Now, there was green shoots in November at times, but there also were times where it just wasn't firing at all. Again, held up pretty well, 17 for 18, won in the end. Were you surprised by
no,
the success?
Like, because I know Paul O'Connell, you know, and I
yeah.
know that the lack of return in recent games would have been driving him absolutely nuts. And he's a very hard worker. And, you know, we've got enough you know, intelligence and experience in the side to be able to overcome that. And I think our lineup selection was very good, you know, where we're calling, where we're throwing, and execution was good. So I think Paulie would be quietly satisfied with that, if not a lot else.
Do you think some of the criticism he's come under, specifically over the last maybe 6 months or so, has been slightly unfair? Because I suppose, not to get too into previous games, but a lot is kind of not luck of the bounce, because obviously it's not bouncing anywhere, but it is a bit, little bit about luck and how things go and who you're playing as well. We were playing some tough teams in that November group of games. Do you think it was slightly unfair, the criticism he was coming under?
Well, look, you know, the buck stops with him as a lineup coach ultimately, but like, a lot of the things that happened weren't his fault. You know, there was execution issues. You know, there was people choosing the wrong call options, you know, putting into traffic. And, you know, there's a lot of moving parts in the lineups. You know, an easy cop out is to blame the hooker, but sometimes, you know, if you don't go up exactly where you've been going up in training, it's only like that much, you know, only a couple of inches of it will go through your hands, you know, or if you don't get them up as quickly as you normally do again, that the hooker throws and the ball goes past where you're supposed to be. So it takes an awful lot of repetition and practice and, you know, consistency for a lineup to go well. And I think when he's had them for a while, that, you know, it starts to show it. And players, you know, have to take responsibility in their own hands and go, right, I missed that lift, or I wasn't where I should be. You know, and that's outside of the lineup coach's control.
Do you think we overreact a little bit? Like, I suppose we can kind of stay with the scrum with that. Like, when we saw all these injuries kind of coming in, you know, Paddy McCarthy goes down, Andrew Porter goes down, Ty Furlong sits out the week because he's not fully fit. I know Dan Sheen was talking in the week leading up to the game that, you know, kind of just relax here, lads. We've got two decent, more than decent international props on either side of me here. There's nothing to worry about. Do you think our depth is... good, in one way to put it, is it up to an international standard?
Yeah, it's getting there, you know. I mean, I think we're never as good as we think we are, and we're never as bad as we think we are, you know. And I think there's a tendency, you know, whether it's driven by news media commentary or social media commentary, that to say, oh, this player is the best in the world, we're terrible, you know, it's usually in between the two extremes, you know. And like, I think a couple of things go the other way last night. Do we win? Probably not. Is it closer? Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so, and to be fair, like, it's very hard to stay at the peak all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys have had a long season. They went from Lions back to probably an abbreviated pre-season, straight into URC and then into the Champions Cup, and then into internationals, and then into Champions Cup and the URC. So it's hard to, like, if you're in your job, are you at your peak of your powers all the time?
No.
And like, the other thing is that other nations have also been trying to improve, you know. I mean, the French and the English, you know, they were in the, like, they're in the doldrums not that long ago.
Yeah.
And they're back. And, you know, it's every team will have peaks and troughs in terms of form. And so, you know, sometimes you just have to accept that and work on getting back to the peak.
So you're not buying into this kind of, there's a gap opening between France and England, per se, to Ireland. You're not too worried about us falling behind.
There was a gap before and we closed it. And, you know, and then we opened the gap. And then they closed it on us. And so there's always going to be evolution with it. You know, like, and people forget we punch massively above our weight. Right? Rugby is, what, the fourth sport in Ireland? You know, we've four teams that we pick from, and we really have to maximise the resources. We don't have, you know, two leagues like England does, and, you know, what is it, 600,000 players, you know, or, you know, two massive leagues like French do. Yeah. You know, so we really have to maximise, you know, what we have, and I think we do that very well.
We're pretty spoiled as a rugby nation, aren't we, really, with the success that we've had, considering the small player pool that is available to us. Do you think we just need to be a little more patient with results?
We don't do that well.
No,
right?
We don't. But
no, I grew up in the 90s, right? So I remember how bad we were then. You know, and Simon Gagan and then Keith Wood were the bright sparks that we had, and then, you know, Brian Driscoll. So we've been incrementally improving. you know. But, you know, I think it's fair to say too that, you know, the four provinces aren't as strong as they used to be, you know. Mm. So, you know, obviously Leinster have been dominant the last few years, but we need, and we're starting to see green shoots of Ulster. Like Munster had a great performance against Leinster back in October, but we need that to be more consistent. So we need four strong provinces hammering off each other, because that's the only way you drive competition and you improve. And, you know, you look at Leinster this year, they're winning, but they're winning ugly, but they're winning.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's important, because
what happens when they actually click?
Yeah. And, but it didn't do us any good last year when they're winning everything by 40, 50 points.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe a bit of hardship is good for teams to find out what they're actually about.
Where do you stand on the kind of notion that we should throw more players in there, like as an unexperienced players, like you mentioned Ulster there are playing good stuff this season.
Yeah.
A couple got an opportunity there at the weekend, McTimney coming off the bench, and Stockdale obviously getting his chance on the left wing after a long time out from the Six Nations. Do you think we need to do that more, or is there kind of should we be careful with that type of thing?
It's a difficult one, right? Because the Six Nations is it's basically the engine that powers the IRFU's finances, you know. And there's consequences for, you know, you get more prize money whether you're first, second, third, fourth, or fifth, you know. So it makes a big difference, you know. And we saw last year that, you know, the IRFU posted a loss because of the World Cup, etc. Or was it 2 years ago? Because we missed out on autumn internationals.
Yeah.
So it's quite fragile, and you know, you look at Wales and the financial difficulties they're having, and they make the same amount of revenue as IRFU.
Yeah.
And people don't realise that, right? But it's how we've managed it. So yes, I'd like to see more players get an opportunity, but you know, I mean, it's always a difficult choice for any coach. Do I drop this guy who served me well?
Yeah.
And is still going well? Blood new player, and you do see that happening, players getting opportunities, but it's difficult because, you know, if we just, you know, say we completely change the team for next week and then we, I know, lost to Scotland or something,
yeah,
you know, then that would be, and finish fourth, you know, that's a sizable impact.
Yeah.
You know, so it's always a kind of fine tightrope you're walking, and you try and give the guys opportunity, whether it's summer tours or you're seeing this game with England A, you know, the Irish 15. So like, they are looking to develop and see how players come through at a higher stage than provincial, but you know, it has to be kind of carefully managed.
Yeah, we're getting fairly existential here, but I'm enjoying it now personally. Yeah. Like, even I suppose if there's kind of two sets of fans, I think, in Irish rugby. One set is happy enough to, you know, compete every year in the Six Nations and win the odd one and win an odd Grand Slam, and then there's probably the other set that are, you know, we need to win a World Cup, we need to get past the quarterfinal, we need to do this. And like you say, it's a balance to strike in that, you know, in order to win a World Cup, we've seen South Africa build their depth throughout the years, take some losses in the internationals in the autumn or in the Rugby Championship, but then it'll prove to them 2, 3, 4 years down the line when they're in a World Cup and they rely on that depth coming through. How do we strike that balance? Because obviously there's this overarching thing in Irish rugby that, you know, it's grand, we compete in the Six Nations, you know, we do well in the internationals and in the autumn, but there's this burning desire in every Irish rugby fan, and I'm sure player, we just want to do well at the World Cup, we just want to get past the quarter final.
Oh no, I was at the World Cup quarter final in 2023, and that was heartbreaking. But you know, we kind of got on the wrong side of the draw there, didn't we? Now this World Cup, we kind of we've a handier draw than we have in previous years.
Certainly easier, yeah.
Yeah.
On paper,
right? I mean, like, don't know disrespect to Argentina, because I know what it's like to play against them, go out in the quarterfinal, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, you're kind of avoiding, you know, the top three or four in the world there, right? But yeah, the thing about South Africa is South Africa don't pay for a lot of their players.
Mm.
You know, there's so many overseas based players.
Japan and, yeah.
You know, Japan and, you know, here, you know, we've got Simon.
A few in the English Premiership as well.
Premiership, you know, so they can afford to, you know, maybe not do so well in the Rugby Championship in the interest of developing depth. You know, so I don't know much about their finance, but I do know that there's a large diaspora of their players playing in other leagues. besides the URC, you know. So, yeah, it's a tricky one, you know, because say you take a punt, right, and you do all that, okay, and you blood load of players, and then you still go out in the quarterfinal.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's a complete disaster, right?
Yeah.
We've got no money.
Yeah, got no money and no semi-final. It's about calculated risk.
Yeah, fair enough. I suppose depth is also a current issue as well, but the amount of injuries we're going through at the minute and players having to kind of step up and fill slots, how do you think those lads that are doing, like, I suppose Michael Milne or Jeremy Lachman coming into the squad, Thomas Clarkson is stepping up big now, especially in that front row situation. We're seeing a lot of players being thrown in the deep end a little bit, like in the France game. Is that for the betterment of Irish rugby, do you think?
I think it'll stand to them, right? Because, you know, Farrell found out a lot about those players, how they stood up in that environment. And, you know, it's good for them that they've had that experience. So now they know, well, that's the standard. You know, that's what we need to play by. Okay, and I don't think it's any harm to do it. You know, now we still got walloped by, you know, 20 points. But, you know, I think, you know, a lot of that stuff is fixable. You know, and like I said, like we discussed, you know, they stood up to the French scrum well, you know, the lineup was excellent. So I think all of those things are, you know, that's money in the bank, you know, from a development perspective.
We had Noel McNamara, obviously, attack coach at Bordeaux, former coach at Leinster and the Sharks, on the show there recently, and he was kind of talking about players going abroad and our kind of overall depth issue in Irish rugby, that lads aren't getting minutes, particularly in Leinster, because there's just so much depth and there's so much talent there, that the easy fix and the obvious solution to him is to let players go abroad. Yep. Your Harry Byrne examples, your Tadhg Byrne examples, whoever else you want to pull up, I suppose even Frawley going to Connacht, staying within the provinces. Do you think that's something we need to exercise more? I think it is growing in terms of sending lads out to Connacht or Ulster or even Munster, getting loads of Leinster players in now. But even, you know, those short-term loans to, say, Bristol, wherever you had top 14.
Did Harry Byrne load it up? But, you know, what I've been thinking about, right, and I don't know if it'll be very popular, is, you know how we got Jordy Barrett over here in sabbatical and Radio Oakwood?
Yeah.
What if it went the other way?
Yeah, I love it.
We sent Caelan Doris down to the Crusaders for...
6 months.
6 months, you know. No, obviously, Leo will probably shoot me for saying that, but...
I love it, though.
But just exposure to a different philosophy and a different way of playing, and who knows, maybe come back with a Super 15 medal, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it's not a necessity, but I don't see any harm in trying it. Because the thing is, with a lot of these top players, if you do it out of season and that... they're not missing any big internationals. These lads aren't playing that many URC games anyway.
Yeah.
They're not actually playing that many minutes.
No.
Like, you're at least not together as a pack. So that's been floated a couple of times in the show. And to be honest, I'm all for it. Like, send Josh Van der Fleer down for a few months. Send whoever, like. Even a Max Deegan, that maybe he isn't getting enough game time. So let's send him down and see if he can improve and step up.
Or a young fella like Joshua Kenny, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, who's been going quite well. Would he benefit from a bit of time playing with, you know, Auckland or something?
Yeah.
Lose, you know? So
I know Ruben Maloney, the young winger coming through at Leinster as well, he came through UCD. He was down with the Storm for a few months down in Australia and absolutely proved to him he's come back a better player, he'll say himself. And I really like that idea, Mike.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
You're a player that's, you know, gone through that and played abroad as well. You played in Harlequins. I believe you weren't getting much game time in Munster. You went abroad, gained some experience, and came back and became an international 29. There's a lot to be said to that for that, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, like, and different leagues have different focuses. You know, when I went to the Premiership, and it was 2006, it was a very much a forward-dominated league, and that's still in the DNA there, where, you know, it was a man-up-a-thon. You know, dominate or be dominated. That was kind of the philosophy of it, and, you know, it definitely was a good learning curve for me, and it taught me a lot about, you know, my core competencies, shall we call it.
Yeah.
And like, I think, you know, there's enough IP exchange, if you want to call it, within. I mean, like, you had Ron O'Gara going down to Crusaders, was it Crusaders? And serving his time there, and then he's over in France, you know, so he's getting a flavour of all the different kind of philosophies that are around the rugby world. So
I
think, you know, that kind of cross-cultural exchange is very helpful. And you'll often get coaches visiting each other and seeing how other teams go about their business, and I think that's helpful.
And should mention the Italians now coming up. They're not the Italians that you would have faced in your debut. No disrespect to the players back then, but they've come a long way in recent years. Should we be concerned going into this game now in round two?
Look, like you said, the Italians have become, you know, quite French looking. You know, they've very good centre pairing, Menoncello and
Brex,
yeah, who will be up there with the centre pairings in the Six Nations. They've always have fairly, they always have a very competitive pack, and they play some good rugby.
Yeah,
you know, sure they beat Australia last year, so they're not like used to be. You play Italy, we'll beat these guys 50-60 points, but that's certainly not the case anymore.
Was that the case when you were a player that you kind of thought not easy is probably not the word you would use in camp, I'm sure, but was there a feeling amongst players that we'll pick up a few points here?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, that said, I played in a team that lost them in 2013.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, historically we would have done very well against them, you know, and it's you know that all going well, you should win it, but you know, often the Italians have different ideas around it, you know, and you know, I played a good few times. I lost them once. I think everything that could go wrong did go wrong. We ended up a young Peter Manny playing on the wing, but I'd like it, and you know, there's a lot of discourse around, oh, should we throw the Italians out of the Six Nations, and without realising, well, you can't because they're shareholders in the Six Nations, and Rome is the best away trip in the Six Nations,
exactly,
bar none.
Yeah.
But you know, you can see the exposure, you know, their teams playing in the URC, and you see the development of them as a rugby nation, you know.
Yeah.
And now there's probably arguments, should we expand the Six Nations? You know, Georgia have been knocking on the door for a while, but I think that's quite tough, because just considering where Tbilisi is and how long it takes to get there, you know, it's but you know, maybe if you look at a Georgian team in the URC, it could be an option.
Yeah, I think people have mentioned the relegation kind of system, which I get, but then Jesus, we're really going to bury Wales, and if they do get relegated, they'll really have no chance of
surviving. Yeah, I don't think I think there's some traditions worth keeping, and the Six Nations is one of them.
Exactly, yeah. Ahead of this Italy game, you would assume there's a couple of changes coming in the starting 15. Who would you change if you were to change maybe two or three players? Who would you like to see thrown in there against Italy this week?
I'd probably like to see Dogbo being given a shot.
He's a name that keeps coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, because like he's a massive human, right? And you know, we don't produce a lot of guys who are 6'6", 120 kilo plus, and can move.
Mm.
So I wouldn't mind seeing him get an opportunity, whether it's off the bench or as a starter. I also would like to see, I'd say probably, you know, give Nick Timoney a shot. He played well.
Starting,
maybe, see how he goes.
Would you put him at open side, or would you?
It's a good question.
So he can play. He can play it. He can play open side. I think he's played blind side before as well. So
yeah, I think probably he plays open side with Ulster. So leave him there. He's a big, powerful man, and he's quick, you know. So I think give him a shot. No harm. I mean, Josh has played a lot of rugby, so.
Yeah.
That'd be my take on it. Sorry, Josh.
but it's still your 7 jersey.
Yeah, I still love you. Yeah. So,
would you consider giving Milne a go as a starting loose head?
It just depends, you know, because like a coach always likes to bring the guy who he's probably more a dynamic carrier than Lachman is.
Yeah.
So often the coach might prefer to bring him on in the second half when the legs have gotten a bit tired and have him running. At tired bodies.
Yeah.
So, but like, I wouldn't complain if he started.
I keep coming back to the tight head position, but like, my personal view of it, just to open the question, I think Thomas Clarkson should be kind of our man now. I suppose Tadic has had his problems with injuries over the last while, and even just having to rest him because he's not quite 100% fit going into some big games. And Finlay, I suppose, is older than Tadic, so he's getting on a little bit. Do we think at this stage now, Thomas Clarkson, 25, has played some big games, club and country, do we just kind of stick with him?
It wouldn't be that quick. I mean, like,
you don't think,
like,
he's ready?
Look, he's good. But for me, I think, you know, Ty is one of the few world-class Ty heads we produced. And if he's fit and on form, I'd start him every single day of the week.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he's not fit, then, like, I mean, obviously, Ty won't be around forever. And Clarkson is going to be make that number three jersey his own, I'd say, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And, like, he's massively improved in the last few years, too. You know, it kind of shows you the value of being patient with players.
Is that the way it hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Because if you look at him 3 years ago, you wouldn't have thought that he'd be in the position he is now. His scrummaging wasn't good enough, but it's massively improved.
Yeah.
You know, and I think obviously he's worked to put on a lot of weight, and that's helped him a lot in the scrum. So I think, and you know, then, you know, you got guys, there's a lot of good young props coming up behind him, and you start to see them getting a bit of exposure. I mean, we saw two young props for Leinster the other day, Sparrow and Smith, you know. Learned a few lessons, but that's all part of the learning curve, you know.
And you've got Billy Bowen at Connacht as
Billy
well.
Billy Bowen, there's a good story for you.
Yeah.
Guy who's playing AIL 2, I think it was, last year, and now looks
2B,
like
2B,
and now it looks like he's going to at least get an opportunity to win the games, I think.
So, like, the Italian game, we talked a bit about it. Feeling kind of, not confident, but wary, but we're not feeling too negative about it. If I was to ask you a score prediction, what would you say?
Ooh, I'm going to say like 32-20, because I think we'll definitely be better than we were, you know, during the week. But, you know, the Italians will all have a fair bit of firepower. I think we referenced their centre combo.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been improving all the time. As we mentioned, they beat Australia during the autumn series. So they'll always be competitive, you know.
Yeah.
But we are at home, and look, we need the win.
Yeah.
You know, we need to get the Six Nations back on track.
And that's basically my next question. Where do you think we'll end up at the end of all this?
I'd like to say second, you know, because...
Optimistic.
I always been optimistic. I mean, like, we always put a target on England whenever we play them, you know, and I know England have been going well, but I think they're probably, you know, precisely the type of thing you need to beat them over there if you want to have any chance of salvaging Six Nations, I say.
Thanks so much for joining us, Mike, on the latest episode of Backseat Pundits.
Yeah, thanks for having me.